Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Not having a lawyer when you need one can be devastating for a person's chances in court. Unfortunately, this is the reality for many people living in Ohio's more rural counties. In Franklin County, there is one lawyer for every 347 people, while in Madison County, the number is one lawyer for every 3,000 people. According to a report from the Ohio Bar Association, 82 of Ohio's 88 counties do not have enough lawyers to serve the local community. Having a disproportionately low number of lawyers has made getting legal aid a significant hurdle for thousands of Ohioans. Joining me now is a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Max Philby. Max, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Max, you wrote the piece for the Dispatch about the lack of rural lawyers. Basically, that was what spurred the idea for this show. So what did you learn about that disparity between the number of urban lawyers and rural communities in terms of having a lawyer available to you?
Yeah, so like you said kind of at the outset, the number of potential clients in a lot of rural communities in Ohio vastly outnumber the number of practicing attorneys. I think it was in 82 of 88 counties, potential clients outnumber attorneys by 700 to 1, believe it or not. And that's due in large part to the fact that roughly 73%, if I recall correctly, of practicing attorneys live in Ohio's largest cities, Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Toledo, Akron, Dayton. But at the same time, only 42% of residents live in those cities.
Mm. Now, the Ohio Bar Association said that the ideal ratio would be one lawyer for every 700 people, right? And that's their study. I don't know, you know, where that number comes from or if it's right or not. But Franklin County has one lawyer for every 347 people. So we have plenty of lawyers here, I guess. You have your pick of lawyers. But then, as I said, when you travel to Madison County, it's one lawyer for every 3,000 people. So did you talk to people? Did you find that hard where they're looking for a lawyer and there's just not many to pick from?
Yeah, so in the story that we published earlier this year, we profiled an attorney named Jeff Spall, who works in Delaware County, but he also does a lot of public defending in Marion County, Morrow County, I believe, and some others. And he talked about how, people in those communities, they're just so grateful he's there, honestly, because it's really difficult to find a practicing attorney in some of those more rural communities.
You wrote about the age disparity, too, that the lawyers that are in the rural counties are getting older.
Yeah, that's right. If I recall correctly, I believe the median age for an attorney in Ohio is around 54 or 55. But in these rural counties, it's closer to 70 because you have these attorneys who have been there for a long time and they just keep practicing because there isn't really anyone to take over their practice or anyone starting up a new one.
Yeah. Did you figure out why? Why do lawyers want to work in big cities? Why don't they want to go to the rural areas?
So some experts I talked to told me that a lot of it has to do with the fact that, people will go to law school in a big city. They will go to law school at an Ohio State or like at a University of Toledo or Dayton. And then they get opportunities in those communities because of where the law schools are based. So that's how they tend to end up in those bigger cities.
Mm. Now, I'm guessing if they work in a more rural county, they'll get more cases, though. So if you go to a law firm that has 100 lawyers working at it, maybe there's not, I guess there's probably plenty of cases, but maybe not as much to do. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, it just depends on the kind of work you want to do. I did talk to, like I'd mentioned, a couple of rural attorneys, and they said they don't have any shortage of work, that's for sure. In fact, a lot of times they have to refer some potential clients to others because they just don't have the time to keep up with it.
Now, that lawyer you talked to in Delaware County, who also works in Morrow and Marion County, what was his name, Greg?
Jeff Spall.
Jeff Spall. What did he say? Why did he pick to practice in a more rural area?
He was from Delaware County originally, and I know it's kind of funny because we probably don't really think of Delaware County as being rural today because of Central Ohio's growth, But it is considered a rural county per the Ohio State Bar Association's metrics, and there's not enough attorneys there to deal with potential clients. But Jeff said that since he grew up there, it was just an environment he was more comfortable in, being in a rural setting. He wanted to start his own practice and whatnot. And so he started in Delaware County and then quickly realized there were opportunities in some other rural counties where he felt comfortable.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the lack of rural lawyers in Ohio with Columbus Dispatch reporter Max Philby. Now, what organizations did you find who are working to try to fix this issue? Who's trying to find us more lawyers?
Yeah, so the State Bar, obviously, is very passionate about this issue, as they should be. And then Legal Aid, which is an organization that typically helps people who don't have enough income, tends to be in more rural parts of the state as well, also passionate about this issue. You know, the state of Ohio Department of Higher Education actually offers an incentive program to try to encourage attorneys to go practice in these rural areas. They'll help them repay some of their student debt if they're able to do that.
Mm. Now, someone who has some power in the Ohio legislature that you talked to is Representative Brian Stewart, who also happens to be a lawyer in a rural area, Circleville. What did he say? I know he said in your article that there's definitely no lack of work. What else did he have to say about it?
Yeah, you know, he just talked about how, and I believe a couple others said this too, about how there really is this need in these communities. And it's, you know, if you want to go be one of several in a big city at a big firm, you can. But in these communities, it's a different kind of practice. It's you really get to know your clients and whatnot. And I think also something that we haven't talked about yet is that, especially in these smaller communities, attorneys are kind of like infrastructure, right? You need them to keep the wheels on the justice system and the legal system moving, but you also need them to help with things like city council and lawmaking and whatnot locally.
Yeah, and you need them for drawing up a will, handling a land trust, real estate transactions. I mean, there's lots more things that lawyers do besides defend you if you find yourself in criminal court.
Right, and from what I've learned, experts I talk to, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people who just, if you know an attorney's not available or they don't know one, they just don't do a lot of that stuff, especially when it comes to leaving wills and whatnot. And that can make things a lot more complicated when someone passes away.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned this incentive to have lawyers move to rural areas with paying off student loan debt. Lawmakers here in Ohio just started that back in 2022, so it hasn't been around forever. Do we know if it's working in just 3 short years?
Yeah, the Department of Higher Ed said that there are a few dozen attorneys who have participated so far. Right now, it only applies to people who work with a defender's office, public defender's office. Mm. But the state bar, I believe, is pushing the legislature to expand that to include civil attorneys, because there's obviously a big need for civil attorneys, too, not just criminal attorneys.
Also, there's this idea of a cap on legal aid reimbursements at $75 an hour. The Ohio Bar wants that cap to be removed. Do they think that that'll get more people working in legal aid in rural areas if we get rid of that cap at $75 an hour?
That's my understanding. They'd be able to answer that question better. But yes, I believe that's sort of the idea, is they could get more people. And I think it could perhaps also do away with this myth that you might make less money simply because you're working in a rural community, too.
Mm. Now, whenever you talked with the lawyer who works in Delaware, what type of cases did he say he deals with the most? When I think Delaware County, I think real estate. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, any and all. He said it's each case is kind of different on its own, and he never quite knows what he's going to deal with. But because he's working in three different counties and with a public defender, it's a lot of defense cases.
Yeah. So I was wondering if there's an issue, if you found in any rural counties, if there was any issue with the justice system slowing down, because everyone has the right to an attorney, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have to wait for your court-appointed attorney to be available, or for someone, I don't know who finds them, for someone to find one, that would slow things down.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way that Jeff talked about it, it was more of like, You know, if you can't find an attorney, for starters, or if you can't find a local one, you have to go to a place that's an hour or two away to find one to come to your community. They don't necessarily know the ins and outs of the court system there. They don't know the judges or the prosecutor and whatnot. And so having somebody who does is a real benefit. It can keep things on a timely, at a timely pace, on a timely track, and it can, you know, potentially benefit a client in the long run.
Do you know if the Marion, the Monroe, the Madison counties, do they draw, they're not that far away from Columbus, so do they draw people from maybe Columbus and Dayton to come be lawyers? Like, do they say, we need you to come out here?
Yeah, absolutely they do. I mean, I think it's just a necessity based on where attorneys live.
Mm-hmm. And whenever you talked with Representative Brian Stewart, he lives in Circleville. He is an attorney, but he also has the power in the legislature to make some of these changes that the bar wants. We're going to be talking with the bar in just a few minutes here. But did he say he was open to these ideas of some of these changes?
Yeah. He himself, as an attorney, was cautious about commenting directly on some of this since he could benefit from it. But yeah, I think he was definitely hopeful that it would have some legs in the legislature.
That's funny. Do you have trouble talking to attorneys for a story because they're being very, like, lawyerly to you?
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly.
All right. Well, is there anything else interesting you found out about this or whenever? Because I know we're going to talk to the Ohio State Bar Association in just a moment as well. And basically, they issued this report that there's not enough rural attorneys, which started you on the story. So is there anything else interesting you found out?
No, you touched on earlier the retirement age, I think. You know, and the Bar Association could probably speak more to this, but I think, you know, we could be approaching a cliff in the not so distant future when you've got most of the rural attorneys who are left are aging out of the system and whatnot. So it sounds like something's really got to be done about that.
Well, I found it interesting that the entire state's average age for an attorney was 54. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably on the older end as well. I guess, I don't know if I'm not an expert in that. We can ask them that, but.
Right. No, yeah. For sure, 55 and up. But I would guess they still have some time before retirement. A lot of these lawyers who are 70 or older, you know, they're technically past the age of retirement.
Yeah.
So they could retire tomorrow if they wanted to.
And leave a county without maybe a whole section of a county without an attorney at all.
Right. Exactly.
That was Max Philby, investigative reporter from the Columbus Dispatch. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk with the Ohio Bar Association about some of those ideas that they propose to lawmakers about how to get more lawyers into rural communities. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. 82 of Ohio's 88 counties do not have enough lawyers to serve the local community. According to the Ohio Bar Association, rural communities are facing a crisis. They say legal needs are going unmet, putting residents at risk. And it's not just defending criminal charges. Lawyers help with child custody, real estate disputes, and they help draw up wills and trusts. With a shortage of attorneys in Ohio's more rural counties, the lawyers that do practice there are facing challenges too, with too much work and not enough time. Joining me now is the immediate past president of the Ohio Bar, Michelle Kranz. Michelle, welcome to All Sides.
Good morning, Amy. How are you?
Thanks for joining us today. So you issued a report saying that there are not enough lawyers in 82 of the 88 counties in Ohio. What impact does that low number of rural lawyers have to rural areas?
Well, it has a couple different impacts, Amy. I mean, the first is the very obvious. We talk about not being able to meet the legal needs of those respective communities. Now, we obviously tend to immediately gravitate to the concept of needing to provide attorneys in relation to criminal justice matters. Mm-hmm. But we also, as you've already highlighted, we talk about the civil needs of those respective communities. And as you've said, when somebody asks me about being an agricultural lawyer in these communities, I'm like, well, that means you need to be a specialist in real estate law, in commercial and business transactions, in taxation, in estate planning. If you're from my area, Northwest Ohio, you better know your environmental law. So there's the obvious pieces that go with needing lawyers in these communities. But Amy, I think there's a secondary issue that I try to highlight, which is from 9 to 5, we're lawyers. Now, my colleagues also argue sometimes 8 to 6:30 or 7 or 8 or whatever that is. But when we leave our respective day jobs, there are obvious requests for lawyers to serve in our communities, whether that's on a fair board, a school board, a library board, draw up the LLC for the concession stand for Little League. Lawyers are called upon to be a fabric of our communities at all times. And when we aren't available as dispute resolvers or lending our talents to our nonprofit groups, the communities suffer in other ways outside of our traditional professional rendering of advice, both civil and criminal.
Have you noticed a strain on the rural lawyers who do live there because of high demand? Do they have too many cases, more than they can handle?
Absolutely. And I think, as we've already highlighted, as your prior guest, I mean, we have an aging population in these communities. And what we're finding is those lawyers who are established in those communities have established client bases. And not unlike what you see in the medical profession, those who might need a lawyer for the first time or only need one on occasion are struggling to find lawyers to take those cases. Because just as with our colleagues in the medical profession, lawyers are saying, I have an established client base. And if you're not part of my client base, I'm not going to take you on.
It's kind of like trying to find a new dentist, where you call and you try to get an appointment and they're like, we can see you in 18 months.
Right. Or in my area, finding a big animal vet. Same concept.
So your report says that the ideal ratio is one lawyer for every 700 residents. So the example I gave in earlier in the hour is that Franklin County has one lawyer for every 347 people. So Franklin County's doing just fine, would you say, with the number of lawyers? Is that true?
Yes. And obviously you have the skew of the government centric portion of Columbus here. So yes, you're going to traditionally have a larger concentration of lawyers because this is the capital. But we also see that in Cleveland, Cincinnati, also have a very low ratio of attorney to residents.
But then the other example I cited, is Madison County, where they only have one lawyer for every 3,000 people. That seems like a big disparity there. Are the Madison counties kind of the ones that stick out to you as, or is this every one of those 82 counties that's under, is underperforming that far?
They're not underperforming that far, Amy, but obviously once we begin to move beyond about the top 10 or 12 population centers, almost every ratio exceeds 1,200. So 3,000 is an outlier with regard to Madison County, but we are seeing well above 1,000 to one attorney ratio in almost every one of the other remaining counties.
Okay. So, and that, but also there's that idea that there are fewer lawyers in the rural counties because there are fewer people there. Is that not true though, that there are fewer there? I mean, there are fewer cases overall, but I mean, there's still the need for the lawyers, as you said, is that right?
Correct. And the ratio is going to be the ratio, regardless of whether it's a smaller community or not. The ratio really dictates to us and highlights for us where the deficiencies are. Because you're exactly right. There is a bias and a presumption that a lower population, you don't need as many lawyers. Mm-hmm. That's why I think the ratio is really informative and instructs us at the state bar as to how best to begin to address these particular deficiencies.
And also, what you worry about, you mentioned this, you worry about the age of the lawyers, because the average age of a lawyer in Ohio is around 54 or 55. But in these rural communities, the average age is pushing toward 70, right?
Correct. And not only do we see that in our rural communities, but some of our, when we look at Toledo and Dayton, and Toledo metropolitan area is one of the areas that I work in, the average age of lawyers in Toledo is 60.9 years of age. Mm. So it isn't, we aren't too far from seeing some of our other metro areas suffer from that. But yes, you do have an advancing age average in all of these rural communities.
Now, the Ohio Bar outlined a series of things that you want to see lawmakers do to address this issue. So let's start with the incentives. What can be done to attract lawyers to practice in rural counties?
Well, the first and probably biggest highlight is relate to what is an attraction, which is financial. Through the work spearheaded by the State Bar and with our great partners over at the General Assembly, we have been able to put into place, funded by general revenue dollars, a loan incentive program. So those willing to, younger lawyers who are willing to enter the rural communities, those underserved communities, which in some instances still do hit some of our metro areas. But if you enter service in those particular communities, there's a loan incentive program of up to $50,000 payable over 5 years. To help not only get you started in working in these communities, but we hope to establish roots and get you to sustain and stay in these communities.
Now, the state started that program, I believe, back in 2022, so it hasn't been around forever. Do you feel in just less than 3 years, can you measure, is it working?
We can, because we have the first numbers. We have 44 lawyers who have taken advantage of that program. We have 11 law students who are entering the program. That was actually will represent our first full year within the program. So we are heading into second year of application. So as we say, this is going to be, and it's a word I always chuckle about, but this is a multifactorial approach. This is step one and one part of helping resolve that and creating some financial incentives. Recognizing that there is a financial pull, you've already highlighted, our metros tend to have a higher salary basis. So this is an opportunity to help fund these lawyers and incentivize them into these rural communities.
So only 44 people so far, you're playing the long game there with that one. You need to grow the program.
We absolutely are playing the long game. Again, it's one of many approaches that the State Bar is taking. And again, we're very grateful for the support that we have gotten from the General Assembly, from now Speaker Huffman, Senate President McCauley, obviously both from Northwest Ohio, and Representative Brian Stewart, our chair of our House Finance Committee, been very supportive of our work at the State House.
Another thing the Ohio Bar is asking lawmakers to do is to remove a $75 an hour cap on reimbursement fees for court-appointed counsel. Tell me about that cap. Why does it exist?
So it does create some uniformity across the state with regard to how everybody is compensated as they work on these particular issues, but it also is a budgetary issue. And when you think about $75 an hour in many traditional lines of work, that would seem to be a fairly remunerative piece of work that you could do. But when you factor in what we have to do to represent individuals, the overhead costs associated with it, $75 is a remarkably low cap. Many lawyers billing in our metropolitan areas, associates are billing between $300 and $500 an hour. Mm-hmm. So if that gives you a comparator, $75 is a very low number and in turn may deter new lawyers who often work in these areas and in court appointed counsel from even entering into these kinds of representations. So we are seeking to raise that cap to at least bring it, certainly not into line with private practice, but at least give financial incentive to bring the best representation forward in these markets.
Do you know how long it's been $75 an hour?
I cannot give you exact, but it's been multiple years. It certainly has not kept pace with inflation over the last 3 to 5 years.
Okay. So do you want the cap removed altogether or do you want it maybe upwards in the, $100 to $200 range?
Oh, I mean, of course we would like to see an uncapped number, but I can assure you that will never be an acceptable point within the government, and understandably so. There has to be some kind of budgetary and monetary consideration as these counties and the state make these determinations. So seeking to lift those caps, obviously this is something that our CEO here at the State Bar Association, Mary Amos Augsburger, has been testifying to. We are certainly seeking any kind of an increase. And I certainly would hope that we would begin to at least see $100 to $125 an hour in the near future.
And who pays for the court-appointed lawyers? Is it the county or is it the state? Where is this money coming from?
It is a combination of both, Amy. So depending, there are different delivery mechanisms within the state system. There is the state public defender system. There is the indigent defense and court-appointed counsel. So the buckets from which the funds come for these court-appointed lawyers are different depending on where the services are originally tendered.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the shortage of lawyers in Ohio's more rural counties. With us is the immediate past president of the Ohio Bar, Michelle Kranz. Tell me more about the court-appointed counsel. Everyone is entitled to an attorney in criminal court in the United States. That's how it works. And even if your county is short of lawyers, you are still entitled to a lawyer. So is there a backlog in some counties where the criminal justice system does not move as smoothly because they're waiting on lawyers?
Well, the one thing, Amy, is we can't have backlogs when it comes to criminal cases. There are obviously important deadlines that are constitutionally guaranteed to individuals who've been charged with crimes. So backlogs are not something we can really tolerate within the criminal system. What I can tell you is, at least anecdotally, my predecessor, a State Bar Association president, was Judge Dean Wilson from Perry County, a lifelong resident of Perry County, he will tell you. So he is very, very familiar with the rural communities. He reached a point as a jurist in Perry County where he was having to secure counsel coming from 60 miles away in Columbus because, again, there are constitutional guarantees. He cannot permit backlogs or delays in criminal cases. So his county and his court were forced into a situation of bringing lawyers in, obviously at a much higher price point because there's simply travel and cost associated with bringing a lawyer from another county in to represent individuals. So again, we can't tolerate backlogs. So at least I can tell you anecdotally in Judge Wilson's situation, that's how he resolved it at the expense of the taxpayers in Perry County.
Our previous guest also mentioned that when you're a lawyer and you work and live in the county where you're doing your lawyering, then you get to know the legal system there. You know the people at the courthouse, you know the judges. So would you say that they can do a better job if they kind of know what they're doing and not coming from 60 miles away?
Well, I would suggest that the legal advice given, of course, is always going to be core to any lawyer, no matter where you're coming from. But the efficiencies and comfort that come from working with a judge, with a staff and in a courthouse certainly lends itself to quality representation. But it doesn't mean that a lawyer coming from another county can't provide those core services. But certainly the efficiencies and comfort that come from working in a familiar territory certainly would be a benefit.
Now, let's talk for a second, where does legal aid factor into all of this? Legal aid is a lower cost legal assistance for those who cannot afford a lawyer. What is the Ohio Bar looking at when it comes to what you're asking lawmakers to do when it comes to funding legal aid?
So Ohio State Bar Association has always been a great proponent and worked hand in hand with our legal aid groups, particularly Access to Justice Foundation, who does great work across the state of Ohio and has actually been a great partner with us as we've been attempting to address this issue. But OSBA has always been a strong proponent of fully funding legal aid, legal services. One of the great benefits of serving this organization is learning and understanding in a great depth the amount of lean in that the State Bar has with relation to our government, to our advocacy efforts on behalf of legal services. So the State Bar Association remains a great proponent. It is a top priority. On an annual basis, we even visit with the Ohio delegation in Washington, a visit with all of our state reps and our senators, primarily to advocate for continued funding of legal aid and legal services in the state of Ohio.
Where is the line? This is going to show my lack of legal knowledge. Where's the line between a court-appointed attorney and legal aid? They're not the same thing.
Not necessarily. Legal aid often tends to find its way into the civil unmet needs. Those are going to be individuals. Our great friend Angie Lloyd, who's the executive director at AJF, often talks about the importance of stabilizing on the civil side with regard to whether it's a housing issue, a child custody issue, resolving landlord-tenant disputes. So you tend to find them working more often on the civil needs that help stabilize entire communities and give individuals opportunities to thrive within those communities.
Have you talked to lawyers in city centers? Have you ever asked them, would you like a job, you know, in Marion County? Have you asked them, like, why they pick where they do their practice?
Well, admittedly, I mean, maybe I haven't asked those questions directly, but we certainly have surveyed and certainly have understandings of what we think is important with regard to where our young lawyers are entering their professions. and where their inflection points are and where they want to serve. I think one of the things that we have focused on is not necessarily, maybe this is Michelle Cran speaking versus the OSBA, but not necessarily trying to convince somebody who was raised in a more urban or suburban setting to enter our rural practice, but more of a focus on highlighting for individuals being raised in these rural communities. Particularly, we have a great emphasis on the 4-H and FFA programs, talking to those young people about opportunities to return to rural settings as legal professionals. I think agriculture remains the number one industry in this country. It remains the number one employer in this country. And I think as a profession, we need to do a better job of highlighting for young individuals in our rural communities that there are opportunities to be lawyers. We have to compete with every other ag-based industry for their talents. As a parent of a kid who just graduated from OSU-ATI with an ag systems management degree and a daughter at Oklahoma State in ag business and ag communication, their opportunities are boundless. And so attracting those young individuals who already grew up in these rural communities back to our profession, we need to highlight the great parts of our profession and recruit in ways we never have before.
Is there a movement at law schools for, I mean, you just did a great pitch right there. Can you go into every law school class and say, you need to take a class and study the exciting world of agriculture law?
Well, I would love that there would be a single bullet, agriculture law, but as I highlighted earlier, it really represents a lot of different disciplines. And yes, the State Bar does have a great partnership with the law schools in the state of Ohio. Again, our CEO is with regularly on a quarterly basis, meets with our deans. This is the topic of discussion because while we may have some urban-centric law schools, it doesn't mean that within it, every one of those urban-centric law schools, there are immediate contiguous rural counties that they can serve. And I would highlight, we have a law school in the state of Ohio, Ohio Northern, who is one of five law schools in the country who are actually located in a demographic that is deemed a rural community. So Dean Charlie Rose at Ohio Northern has been a great voice for us to listen to understand what students are looking for, and I believe has really been very instructive for the remaining deans in the state. So, yes, we do have an opportunity to interact with the deans, and our team here at the State Bar Association on a regular basis is in those law schools and certainly making the exact same pitch I'm making today.
And have you looked into any mentor programs? You know, those 70-year-old lawyers in those rural counties, they can, take alongside a young lawyer and probably teach them a lot.
You're exactly right, Amy. And that's something that when we talk about the OSBA, at least putting its not only leaning in, but putting a few dollars where it matters, OSBA has created a full-time position here at State Bar for our rural practice and general practice coordinator, Amy Milam, who we might say we borrowed from Ohio Farm Bureau. And she is working on building those pipelines, not only building the pipelines, but finding ways to make matches between exactly the individuals you just highlighted, Amy, those who are more mature in the practice and finding opportunities to connect with, mentor with, and potentially work in the practices of these older lawyers.
Well, that was Michelle Kranz, immediate past president of the Ohio Bar. Michelle, thank you so much for your time today.
Great, we appreciate the opportunity.
And coming up, we're going to learn more about legal aid in rural communities here in Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Access to a lawyer can be life-changing for thousands of Americans working their way through the legal system. In rural Ohio, lawyers are in short supply, leaving thousands of Ohioans with little in the way of legal aid or accessible help. This disparity is not marginal. In Franklin County, there's one lawyer for every 347 people, while in Madison County, the number is one lawyer for every 3,000 people. Joining me now is Kristen Lewis, Advocacy Director for Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio's Rural Service Area. Welcome to All Sides, Kristen.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
So you were quoted in the Columbus Dispatch article that spurred the show today. You said you used to work as a lawyer in a rural county, and you saw a decline in attorneys firsthand. Tell me about what you saw there.
Sure. Well, I joined Legal Aid in 2001 as a staff attorney in our New Philadelphia office located in Tuscarawas County. And when I joined the practice around that time, about 24 years ago now, there were over 100 attorneys practicing in Tuscarawas County. And there was a very robust bar association. We had pretty active committees and a lot of involvement. Now we have about 60 attorneys who are members of the Tuscarawas County Bar Association. So honestly, still a little more robust than some of these other counties in the rural area, but a substantial decline in about 20 years. And that has had a really big impact on the community, on the needs of the community and the families that live within the rural service area. And it's obviously not just in Tuscarawas County that that has happened, but all across the rural service area in Ohio.
Why do you think lawyers end up in cities? There's plenty of work in rural areas. They're not going to find a lack of cases. But why do more lawyers end up living in cities?
So I think there's a couple different reasons for that. One is, honestly, there's a lot of economic pressure coming out of law school to maximize earnings. It is very expensive to go to law school. And so a lot of law students these days are graduating with upwards of $100,000, sometimes $200,000 in student loan debt. And so your largest salaries are going to be located in metropolitan areas with larger law firms. So you can make a good living in a rural community. Yes, absolutely. But those bigger salaries are going to be found in the metropolitan areas. But also there's perhaps a preference for certain amenities and opportunities, professional opportunities from partners of attorneys just coming out of law school. You know, do they have a certain lifestyle that they're hoping to live in and work in, and, you know, schools to send their kids to? There's different amenities in urban areas as opposed to rural areas. And I think that does contribute.
Now, the Ohio Bar worked with lawmakers and they established a program to, if you work in a rural area for a certain amount of time, a certain number of years, you can help get some of your student loan debt repaid through the state. And our last guest mentioned that they have about 44 people in that program right now, which is not the hundreds we probably need, but a start. So she said she's playing the long game there. Do you feel like something like that will work if more people know about it and get involved in the program?
Yeah, well, that program, while it is a really good start, is also somewhat limited in terms of the type of work that people can be compensated for. So it's more focused for folks who are working in the criminal justice field. So prosecuting attorneys who will take court-appointed counsel cases. That leaves a lot of work to be done on the civil side. Would love to see that particular program expanded to help pay student loans, you know, for folks who are working in civil law too. You know, there are some other federal student loan forgiveness programs out there currently that have helped get folks into nonprofit legal work and help you know, make those jobs more affordable for folks all across the country. That's kind of uncertain in these times as to whether those student loan forgiveness programs will continue under the current administration. So it helps, but I don't think it's necessarily going to solve the problem completely.
Well, tell me about legal aid. I asked this before, but the idea of a court-appointed attorney versus what a legal aid attorney does. Can they be one and the same, or is legal aid separate from that court-appointed attorney?
Legal aid is separate. So the legal aids represent, we are in every single county across the entire United States is covered by a legal aid program. And legal aid provides free civil legal services to moderate income folks. We do not take any cases that are generally court appointed or that provide for attorney fees. So we represent folks who are facing housing instability issues, who may be having problems getting food assistance or other public benefits, or need help accessing medical care or education. We have done some foreclosure defense work. So we are fully on the civil side. We do not do any criminal defense work. And we generally really focus our work on where there are no other resources available for folks to get access to attorneys.
And are you finding that you have enough people? You work for Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio. Do you have enough people, or is there a lot more work and things have to slow down a little bit because you don't have enough lawyers?
So we, our work is impacted by the lack of attorneys in rural areas. I will say that. But the issue there is that we have over the years established a really robust pro bono system where local attorneys can help support the work of legal aid by volunteering. And when the number of rural attorneys is reduced, we don't have as many opportunities to expand services to folks in rural areas because legal aid can only do so much internally. Legal aid is always understaffed in terms of the amount of, the amount of work we have versus our internal capacity. Most of that, though, is fully the result of funding. There's a huge justice gap in terms of what legal aid is funded to do and what are the needs of the communities that we serve. So we're looking at a joint shortage, both in terms of funding and in terms of really partner attorneys across the rural service area.
Who is supposed to fund legal aid? Is it counties, cities, the federal government, all of the above, little bits from here and there?
Yeah, all of the above. So the Legal Services Corporation is a federal entity. It is a nonprofit entity created by Congress that helps to fund legal aids across the country. We also receive funding through IOLTA, interest on IOLTA accounts, but without getting too much in the weeds.
Well, tell me what that is. What is it? IOLTA? Yeah. What is that?
IOLTA. Interest on lawyer trust accounts is what that stands for. Every lawyer is required to have their own separate bank account in which to deposit client funds. And of course, the reason for that is you don't want to ever commingle personal funds, business funds, client funds, right? So every attorney has to have their own separate bank account where client funds get deposited. And the interest on that, those accounts actually is diverted to fund legal aid. And that is according to state statute that was created a number of years ago to help fund legal aid in Ohio. And then the funding from that is really dependent on interest rates, right? So when the interest rates go up, the funding through that goes up. And when interest rates go down, the funding for legal aid goes down. We also have lots of other grants through federal, state, and local entities. We have charitable donations, foundations, and every legal aid across the country has its own funding sources. And it really is dependent on the resources available in the communities in which they work.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the lack of rural lawyers in Ohio with Kristen Lewis, Advocacy Director for Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio's Rural Service Area. Previously in the show, we talked about the Ohio Bar is asking lawmakers to eliminate a $75 an hour cap on some attorney fees for court-appointed cases. But does this not impact legal aid because you are not doing court-appointed cases, right?
That's correct. That does not impact legal aid at all.
Okay.
Although I do think that that would help attract, other attorneys into the rural areas because that's a very low rate for compensation for an attorney based on, their own internal expenses at this point.
Another thing we talked about earlier is there's a concern about the ages of lawyers. The average age of a lawyer in Ohio is around 54, 55, but in rural areas, that age is more, in some counties, it's closer to 70. What do you see in your service area? Are you seeing the average age of lawyers being older?
Yes, it's certainly an aging demographic. That's just the way that it happens in rural service areas is that unfortunately there hasn't been the same ability to pass on a law firm as in metropolitan areas. So when attorneys are preparing to retire, they often bring in associate attorneys, they train them, and then they pass on their law firm upon retirement. In the rural service areas, there just hasn't been the ability of other staff to pass on that law firm to. And so you see attorneys practicing longer and longer, many times, not only because they personally enjoy the work, but also because they really believe that they're providing an essential community function. And they understand that when they close up their law firms, that that's just one less attorney in the community to serve people.
Do you have a hard time recruiting people to legal aid at any age, or is it like I don't know if legal aid attorneys have a different average age than the state?
I think we do. I think our staff trend is trending at this point towards the younger side, and that's been consistent through the years, in part because it's, I think, more difficult to join legal aid as a more established attorney because of the differences in income. I mean, our salaries at legal aid are not necessarily on par with the salaries in the private sector. And so it's difficult to give up a pretty comfortable salary to go work for legal aid. So we tend to recruit attorneys right out of law school. Our funding fluctuates, and so it's always a battle of, making sure we have sustained funding so that people can continue to stay on staff and learn and grow, but we do tend to be a little bit younger.
Now, the Ohio Bar is, going to meet with lawmakers at the State House, as they work through the budget, and they have certain priorities that they're trying to get into the budget, which is, that $75 an hour I talked about, and then expanding the program for the loan repayment. There's like four different things the Ohio Bar is trying to do. But you, from a legal aid perspective, what would you like to see Ohio lawmakers do to help in your organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the current ask by the Ohio State Bar Association is to continue funding legal aids at $2 million over the biennium budget. And that's $2 million for every single legal aid for 2 years, which is
For
it's
all 88
something
counties, yeah.
for all 88 counties.
That doesn't
Yes.
seem like enough, but okay, continue. Yeah.
It's not enough, to be frank. It's not enough. I mean, we're grateful for all the sources of funding that we receive, but it is not significant. It is not substantial. And honestly, it is actually not on par with what the other states around us do. So the Ohio State Legislature has not historically included a general revenue line to fund legal aid, but states like Michigan and Indiana have a much more robust funding structure for their state's legal aids. We'd love to see Ohio move in that direction in the future.
So, and I mean, has Ohio always kind of had a different funding structure than these other states, or is it new? Are these other states, are there newer funding structures because there's advocates out there and lawmakers in other states are listening to them?
So, Ohio historically has not had a general revenue line for legal aid. I can't speak to the recency of the changes in Michigan or Indiana or other states. Every state funds legal aid a little bit differently. but unfortunately, I can't tell you when that funding came in line for Michigan or Indiana.
And we only have about a minute left, but are you recruiting, when you recruit people for legal aid, because I know sometimes lawyers, can you cross state lines? Or if you become a lawyer in Ohio, it's easiest to just stay in Ohio and practice here.
It's easiest, yes. It's easiest to do it that way. Each state has their own bar exam, and you have to either pass that state's bar exam, or in certain circumstances, you can waive in to the bar if you've been practicing for a certain number of years.
I was getting at was recruiting from other states if you need more lawyers. Is that not as easier said than done?
Easier said than done. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Kristen Lewis, Advocacy Director for Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio's Rural Service Area. Thank you, Kristen, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurevich. I want to say thank you to our staff, Senior Producer Marcus Charleston, Producer Aaron Esmont-Rabinowitz, our student producers David Stein, Iza Huck, and Colin Simpson, and also thanks to Chris Corcoran, our student producer who produced the show today. Video production by The Ohio Channel, board operation by Chris Johnston and Cameron Howard. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.